is the Tantalk Radio Network.
New York, and Big Ed is in the control room, and we're going to try again because we're going to talk to a really great literary agent. And I just tried the number, Ed. If you can try it again, the 202-212 number, and see if you can get through to them. And once we get through, we're going to be talking to somebody who's really one of the most famous literary agents in New York, Miriam Chris. And meanwhile, I want to talk about several other things because it's really a fantastic time of the year. We're at the end of April, which means coming up for all of you is Writer's Digest contest. And the Writer's Digest contest, it's really a premier contest. It's probably the best one of all. And it is the deadline is May 7th, and I'm sure that if you've got something that you've been, you know, you are really proud of and something that you think really has a shot at winning a prize, you should go to Writer's Digest and look at the rules for entry. There are many different categories, and I think you'll find one for you, whether it's inspirational, whether it's poetry, either free verse or rhyming poetry, but also all the different genres that you can think of, and try to find something in your work, perhaps a short story, perhaps the beginning of a novel that you've got, because you can send in the first part. So have a look at it, and it's really a fantastic opportunity to get your work out there in front of an agent. And whether or not you win first prize, which of course is a fantastic thing to do because then you are probably sure to find an agent, it is a wonderful opportunity for you to have even an honorable mention in the Writer's Digest contest is fantastic. And at the same time, I wanted to remind you that, as always, at the beginning of every month, Irene Goodman Agency, which is really the premier agency in New York City, Irene has a critique, which she does. It's for charity, and you make a bid on eBay, and the winner gets to have Irene read your work and give you a very, very detailed critique, advice, and really open up your mind to what an agent is looking for in obtaining a piece of work. So this is at the Irene Goodman Agency. It's just IreneGoodman.com. And if you go on there, you'll see Get a Critique from Irene Goodman. And it's a really wonderful thing to do. So I hope that you will think about doing that. There are two critiques. She takes two each month. And all the money that she raises goes for Hope for Vision and Foundation for Fighting Blindness, two charities that are very dear to her heart. And really, there's nothing so nice as to have a critique from somebody who really knows what she's saying. When Irene says something, you know it's going to be great. So I'm just smiling over there because I think Big Ed has you have Miriam. Do you have Miriam on the phone? Okay, Ed, thank you. Hi, Miriam.
Hello, how are you?
Okay, great. Okay, well, you know, I've already done a little intro here into the Irene Goodman critiques because I like to promote this every month. At the beginning of every month, I know that she opens up the bidding, and it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to do. So I had a few minutes to tell my listeners about that.
Well, I think it's good for everybody. You know, it's a wonderful charity, and it also produces really wonderful results. She's had some people, you know, come out of it with phenomenal improvement on their manuscripts. So,
I think she's been doing this
for a long time and does it really well.
And she knows what she's saying. Now, you know, I did a little introduction to you because I have already said that you are known as a super agent and you're sort of faster than a speeding bullet because you can read 100 pages in an hour. And in many ways, you are more powerful than a locomotive because you can get six-figure deals for first-time writers. So that's pretty good, huh? And on top of it, although you might not change the course of a mighty river, you certainly can change the course of a writer's life. So we're going to give you that title of super agent, okay?
Well, I don't know if I can own that, but...
I think you can own it. I know you've done...
Able to...
You've done some wonderful things for people, and it's so exciting. You know, when you think about a job to have, having being a literary agent is such a fantastic job. You get to read.
I can write my books off on my taxes. That makes me very happy.
Oh, isn't that nice? I know the feeling. It's fantastic. Wow. You know, you of course. This ability to read is fantastic. I'm much like you. I'm not sure. I never time myself, but I read like 5 books a week too. So
it's... yeah. And honestly, you know, people are kind of amazed when I talk about that. But I came by it by an odd way. You know, if you're talking about getting bitten by a radioactive spider or something like that. No, actually, when I was a kid, I had a very hard time learning to read. I was actually in remedial reading through third grade. So it was something that was really challenging for me, and I never learned to read phonetically. I still have horrific reader's pronunciations because I don't read aloud in my head. I actually just sort of stumbled into what speed readers do, which is called chunking, where you kind of just look at the shape of a word and not the individual letters. So it's an odd superpower. That's the only superpower I'm going to own up to. But it came out of a certain amount of adversity, and I always encourage parents when they're talking about their kids having challenges when they're young, you never know. They might turn around and really surprise you.
Exactly. Well, it's so wonderful to be able to read and to be able to enjoy a good book. And, of course, you – When did you decide to become a literary agent?
I was in graduate school doing art history, working at the Metropolitan Museum of Art with their curatorial program, and realizing I didn't want to be an art historian after all. I'd always thought I wanted to be a curator ever since reading. Again, books come into it, you know, but reading The Mixed Up Files and Miss Basil E. Frankweiler and falling in love with the Metropolitan Museum of Art before I even stepped foot in it through this children's book. But then getting there and realizing that, you know, like any job, it's not quite what you expected it to be. It's a lot more politics and a lot less art on some level. So I started looking around for something else to do, and Irene was advertising, and I kind of said, well, I like books a heck of a lot, and I enjoy when we go to, you know, the flea market, I enjoy haggling over those things, so maybe that qualifies me to start selling books for a living. And Irene and I sat down. I think she had a list of, like, 20 questions. We got to, like, 3 of them, but we talked for 2 hours, and that was the beginning.
Well, she's easy to talk to, that's for sure.
Lord, yes.
Wow. You know, it's so wonderful. One of the things people will always say to me on, you know, well, you're always saying about the writers who are on your program that their books are really great, and you really like them, and you say words like fantastic and terrific, and then I said, well, yeah, it's my program. I only interview people that I want. I'm not going to interview somebody whose books I hate. And so I think
that's a valid program, policy.
It must be the same with you. I mean, you can pick the books that you love.
I think it's one of the real joys of being an agent versus an editor. I have tremendous respect for what editors do. And when they're championing a book and they're bringing it to acquisitions, you know, they are pretty much lined up with my job in that respect. But they also inherit books that you know, maybe somebody went on maternity leave, or maybe it was something that, you know, somebody had bought and then unfortunately changed jobs. So they sometimes end up with books that maybe wouldn't have been their first choice, and they have to, you know, do their very best for those books and bring them to market and champion them. That's not something that really happens on our side of the fence. We have tremendous amount of freedom because what we are risking, we are gambling. I think everyone in publishing has to sort of have a gambler's soul, but what we're gambling is our own time. And so when we invest in something, we really have a lot of freedom to do that. I don't have to have anyone sign off on my books. You know, I'll go and tell everyone in the office about it because I'm excited about it, but I don't have to go and make a case before, you know, 10 other people, including marketing and sales and everybody else. Give me money so I can acquire this. I can just go to the author and say, I love this, and this is what I believe I can do for you. So it does give us a lot more freedom.
Well, and it makes you a super, super agent. you know, when of course, Irene Goodman Literary Agency is famous for when they take on a writer, that they take on fully, you know, a full commitment to that writer. And, of course, you're well known for the Power Summits, and I know Irene had mentioned them before. And do you like that procedure where you sit and really analyze what to do for a writer?
Yeah, I think the Power Summits are incredibly powerful because they can provide an opportunity to pull in all the different members of an author's team. And you really are partnering with the publisher in that case. When you have an opportunity, maybe it's a new direction that the author's about to go in, maybe it's a new contract, whatever it might be, there are certain moments where, you know, doing the same old is not an ideal way forward. And we can sort of seize those moments and say, all right, there's an opportunity to do something bigger and better. How can we catalyze that? And getting everyone in one room, even in today's world of, you know, instant communication, face-to-face time with people can be really powerful. And just having everyone sit down and talk and getting everyone really excited about what's happening has a pretty powerful effect. We don't do them often. You don't want to overuse them, but you want to have that in your arsenal and use it when appropriate.
Well, when you first started off, who was sort of your first find? Who was your...
My very first find? Oh, actually, I was there for about a month, maybe slightly less. And I always used to say in those days that I knew the market because I was the market. Irene knew it because she'd been doing it, you know, as long as I was alive. But at that point, I was coming in as a reader, as a fan, as someone who read easily a book a day, and primarily romance at that time. A lot of sci-fi fantasy as well, but a lot of romance. And I read this really amazing Regency romance, and I came to Irene. I found it in the slush pile. I brought it over, and I was like, this woman can write. And Irene was like, is it as good as anything out there? I'm like, yeah, it's better. And it was actually Jenner Peterson, who is now a USA Today best-selling author.
that must have been an exciting moment.
It was. And she was somebody who, you know, even, and now I'm going to date myself, but even in those days was doing a lot of self-promotion. She was running the Passionate Pen website at that time, which she had sort of set up as a resource for writers, which impressed me when I was reading her query. So I think, you know, the things that people can do to kind of set themselves apart is make the case for why they would be good at promoting something, make the case that they are the right person to have written this book, whatever genre it may be. And of course, I think have the writing. If you don't have that, all the rest of it is just window dressing if the writing doesn't prove that you have the chops to do it.
Well, You know, it's so exciting always for writers to meet literary agents. And I have to take a quick commercial break. But when we come back, I want to talk about how writers pitch and how, especially at writers' conferences, how they, what they should do when they get an opportunity to pitch to somebody famous like you.
Happy to.
Okay, we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com. Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Looking for a good book? Whether you want the latest bestseller or a rare book, Haslam's Bookstore at 2025 Central Avenue in downtown St. Petersburg is the place to visit. Haslam's has been in business for over 70 years and is the largest new and used bookstore in Florida. With 30,000 square feet and over 300,000 books, you'll find just the right book for you. Bestsellers, cookbooks, military, history, and so much more. Check out their website, www.haslams.com, to find out about their special events. Remember, Haslam's, one of Florida's true treasures, 2025 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg, and they're open on Sundays from noon to 5.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with Miriam Chris, the New York City super agent, one of those people that you look up to the sky, and you hope that you will see her. All writers are always looking toward New York City, and it's just so exciting to have you on the program because I know that you know, you're well known, of course, in the writing community, and you attend a lot of the writers' conferences. Do you enjoy writers' conferences?
I really do. I think they're wonderful experiences because, you know, one thing that brings all of us together there is that we all love books. So you immediately have something in common, even if you just sit down next to someone at the bar. You immediately have something really powerful in common with them.
And now, when you attend these, for writers who haven't attended one yet, you usually get an opportunity to pitch a book. And tell us when what's the worst pitch you've ever received?
I wouldn't do that to somebody. My God, if they recognized it,
they might recognize. Okay, well,
that would be horrific. No, I think one of the problems that people do sometimes is that they don't do their research. You know, you have such great opportunities these days to get online and find out who sold what. And there, you know, Publishers Marketplace is a very good place to look for this. It pays, even going to a bookstore and looking at books that you think your book would live next to on a bookshelf. You know, who does it share? Who does your book share fans with? Well, who sold those books? You know, it pays to know who is representing things that share a similar style and audience with your project. And if you sort of say, well, no, my project is a unique snowflake and nothing has ever like it has ever been written before, I'm sorry to hear that, because it's going to be difficult to sell it because nobody knows they already want to read it, which sounds counterintuitive, but you always want to give people something that they understand and that they want to read. And then once you've done your research and you know that the person that you're sitting across from at one of these pitch appointments sells the kind of book you've written, it pays to be concise. It, you know, people always talk about their elevator pitch, and you know, you want to be able to get across the concept of your book in a sentence or two, and that I think can be really difficult for new authors, particularly because they've sweated over the details of this novel, and to ask them to throw all of that rich detail to the wind and just get down to the nitty-gritty, I think can be a kind of painful experience, but it's an incredibly powerful exercise to put yourself through, and it helps sometimes if you practice, you know, if you talk to other people who are in your life who you haven't talked to about your book, and you try to sell it to them. Tell them why they should read it. And don't get hung up too much on the details. One thing that I notice is people get really bogged down in character names, for example. A lot of times you can just call them the librarian. I don't need to know, you know, what her maiden name was. It doesn't matter. You're really just giving a very quick sketch of who your characters are, what they're going through, and why I should care. And I think that the more you can get to the heart of that, the better you will be able to captivate the person sitting on the other side of the table. One thing I always tell people when they very first sit down is, you know, tell me what your book is. In other words, what genre is it? Because I do represent a lot of different kinds of genre fiction, and they all have, you know, slightly different flavors. I'm not going to listen to a pitch for a, you know, romance novel, a contemporary romance novel, with quite the same set of judgments that I would, I don't know, a young adult novel or even a science fiction novel. They all have different demands that their audience is going to make on the novel, and so the pitch should reflect an understanding of who that audience is.
Now, talking about those types of book, what type of book are you looking for specifically nowadays? Is it a particular genre that's attracting you, or are you open?
I'm pretty open. I always say if it's fun to read, I probably represent it. I do genre fiction pretty exclusively. There are other people in our agency who are really brilliant at nonfiction, but it just is not my forte. And as much as I occasionally enjoy reading a literary novel, for most of my books, no one will stop and say, "My God, what a beautiful sentence." Just doesn't come up too often for me. For me, it's about narrative drive. It's about getting me to keep turn those pages because I just need to know what happens next. A few of the things that I've got on my wish list is I've been looking for a big, beautiful, very sensual, very character and world driven epic fantasy, female epic fantasy, along the lines of a Jacqueline Carey or an Anne Bishop for years. And because they take a long time to write, and they're always a bit of a challenge to find somebody who's really doing it up to that level. And then, in YA, I think we've seen a whole lot of paranormal stuff, and we've seen a whole lot of post-apocalyptic stuff. And I think if those things are really extraordinarily well done, there's still some room, but it's very crowded. So, you know, right now what I'm looking for is, and I wish I had a pithier way of saying this, but those books that deal with very real issues in non-preachy ways. You know, the non-issue issue books where the characters just feel like real teenagers and they're dealing with all the trials and tribulations that go with being that age and the heightened emotions that you naturally experience.
Well, it is a good area. I know that the YA category has expanded quite a bit recently.
Mm-hmm.
I think partly it's because of the readers who were sort of past Harry Potter and now into more, you know, advanced young adult fiction. So that's good to hear that there are still a lot of readers out there.
Oh, definitely. And they're not all teenagers by any stretch of the imagination. A lot of adults are reading YA. I do think you're right. Harry Potter kind of ushered that in a big way. Certainly Twilight reinforced it. But we have seen a number of really big name series that the fans are across the board. But I think there's still a need for authenticity of voice. I think if you start to speak too much to that adult audience, it loses some of the immediacy that makes it so popular.
Now, when you've been at these pitch sessions, mm-hmm. have you found some real treasures?
I really have. I was at Thriller Fest last year, and they do their pitch sessions in kind of an interesting way. A few conferences have started doing this, where it's almost a speed dating setup. So instead of saying, okay, you're going to meet with this one or two individuals, and you're going to sit down for 10 minutes and really get to talk about your book in depth, which is the more traditional way of doing these pitch sessions, they've started doing these speed dating ones where it's a huge room full of industry professionals, agents and editors, and you kind of pick who you want to target, and you wait in their line. So if you're more popular, you might be waiting a little longer. And then you have usually 3 minutes to sell them on your book. And honestly, you shouldn't need more than 3 minutes because, as I said, it's that elevator pitch. It's what is this book and why should I want to read it? And that really should take you only a sentence or two. If you can get it down to that, it's incredibly compelling. And so I had a very first author I sat down with at the Pitch Fest last year at Thriller Fest, as they call it. And she was a television writer, but this was her very first novel. And it was about a woman who had been through a truly horrific experience about 15 years earlier. She'd, you know, been raped and left pregnant and, you know, it just horrible. She spiraled down, you know, became an alcoholic, was living on the street for a while. And as the novel opens, she's finally pulled her life together. She is out and working for a private eye firm when she gets asked to help with a missing girl. We very quickly learn that this is the girl that was the product of the rape that she gave up for adoption 15 years earlier. So she's trying to find her, but there's a lot of emotion that goes into that.
Wow, I want to read that book.
Yeah, it's just fantastic. And we actually did sell it in a multi-book, multi-country deal just before the holidays. So it will be coming forth from Morrow. It was called Deep Current, but it's got a new title that hasn't been decided yet.
Well, I have to get that author on to tell me about it. Because
I can certainly set you up with her.
Well, you see, she made it so interesting that you wanted to buy it and I want to read it. So that's exactly. That's the perfect pitch,
that's the whole
right?
Trick. That is the whole trick. And you know, it's interesting that when I was pitching this, because really a book never gets to a stage where it's not being pitched, whether it's being pitched by the author to an agent, by the agent to the editor, by the editor to the acquisitions group, to, you know, from the sales to the booksellers, from the booksellers who are trying to hand sell it to people, or even just, you know, you read a book that you loved and you want your friend to read it too. You're the one pitching it in that situation. So books are constantly being pitched. When I was pitching this one, I was saying, you know, it's basically Dark Places meets Girl on the Train, you know. It's dark. It's dark.
Wow.
And sometimes giving comp titles like that, whether they be movies or books, can be kind of a shorthand for the person that you're talking to understand the tone in the audience of whatever it is that you're pitching. So that can be a useful tool, too. Don't overuse it, and I think it's one of the problems that people run into when they do that is they say, it's the next, and then they name some really huge book. And I think that hurts you more than it helps you, because chances are that the editor or agent who's sitting there goes, you know, you're not Stephen King. You're not going to be the next whatever that book you just said was, because you don't have the track record. Even if the book was that good, it takes a lot of luck to have a huge, huge, huge New York Times bestseller. So you're better off doing your homework and picking comp titles that are doing very well. You don't want to pick something that bombed, but you don't necessarily want to just name the biggest book of a generation.
Yeah, you don't want to do the... It's a Godfather with God and with the Wind combined.
Right.
You know. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's a little much. So once people come to a pitch session, then it's important that they follow up, huh?
It is. It really is. And it's important, and I know it can be a moment of great stress because, you know, a lot of people who write are not necessarily extroverts. You know, they like staying home and playing with their imaginary friends in the best way possible. So sometimes being put in a situation where they have to be the one directly selling their book can be really stressful. You know, I have a lot of people who are like, oh, is it okay if I read? Is it okay? Anything like that is fine. But they get so worked up and they're so excited that, yes, you do actually want to see the project, that they feel like the hard part's over and mentally they've kind of moved on. And a lot of times I'm giving them instructions that are specific to me, you know, in terms of how I'd like to see that submission come in. And I almost have to prompt people, you can write this down. Because I think they're just excited that the hard part is over. But it does pay to take note of whatever it is that the agent or editor says, just because it makes our job easier. Whenever you get back from a conference, you're going to kind of get a flood in your inbox, and unless people are following whatever conventions you set up, it can be a little challenging to figure out, oh, was this something I requested, or is it something that's just coming in the slush, or something like that. Pays to follow the directions, like anything else in life.
Which brings me to the query letter, which is a subject that is of endless curiosity to writers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it is such a, I like to leave it to the end, because when I start talking about it, it's like the writers out there is like, and then I get emails, oh, you didn't tell me the exact words to write. I said, well, no, it's real hard. It's really difficult to do that. And it's such an area that is fraught with, you know, terror for most writers. They can write a 600-page book easily. I mean, no problem. Mm-hmm. They just sit there all, you know, day after day for months and a year, 2 years, and they're very happy people. And then the day comes when they type that, the end, and they have to start writing query letters. So you didn't tell us the worst pitch, but what's the worst query letter you've ever received?
See, again, the same thing. I feel like there's always that risk someone's going to hear it and go, oh, no, that's mine.
Oh, you never got one just like a one-line thing. This is the best novel.
Oh, yeah. No, you know, this is the next, you know, number one New York Times bestselling, or, you know, if you take this on, you will make both of us $1 million, or, you know, that their grandiose claims are never the right way forward. Irene got one where a guy was convinced that they had been lovers in a past life.
Ah.
That was kind of a winner.
Uh-huh.
They were not destined to be lovers in this life. They were only
in
destined
the past
to work
life. That's
together.
Good.
But that might be a winner. Yeah, I think bringing past lives into it is probably a mistake. You can avoid it very easily.
So, you know, I tell writers, of course, that it, like you said, they have to do their homework, and it helps to know not only just that the agent is taking submissions, but what type of submissions, and to do some research on the agent of what type of work, you know, you've taken on before.
And I, again, I think this all goes to the same question of knowing your audience. You should be able to answer, and one of my favorite questions in those pitch sessions is, you know, if someone bought your book and they brought it home and they put it on their keeper's shelf, what is it living next to? You know, who is your fan and what else do they read? And that doesn't mean necessarily who wrote another book that's exactly the same as yours, but who, what other books would that person enjoy? What would your book live comfortably next to on a bookshelf? And I think if you can narrow in that, that gives you a really good shortcut to figuring out who your audience is and what exactly it is you're writing. I remember a client years ago who had sent me a really cool project of contemporary fantasy, and I was like, oh, this is urban fantasy. And she's like, what's that? So it was a interesting moment to be able to educate her and be like, no, this is what you're doing. And she went on to be a very successful urban fantasy author. But I think sometimes authors are hesitant to read too much in their own genre because they don't want to be accused of plagiarism or even be influenced on some, you know, subconscious level by other people's projects. And I can understand that, but it is important to know what you're writing. And then when you come to targeting agents, who's selling those other books? Again, I think Publishers Marketplace is a great place to look. Certainly you can just Google those authors and agent, and they may well talk about their agents. They may thank them in the acknowledgement section of their book. There are a lot of different ways you can kind of piece out who's doing what. But it's valuable information to have.
Now, when you get a query letter, are you impressed if the writer already has established a platform for themselves, whether it's a web page or a blog, that type of thing? Does that influence your consideration?
Only in so much as it's helpful. So just having a blog or a website is fine. It doesn't really help or hurt. If you're, you know, if you give really good tweet and you're already up to thousands of Twitter followers, then that's helpful. You know, if you have a website that's doing something more than selling a book that's not out there yet, like going back to Jenna Peterson, you know, she was running the Passion of Pem website for years before I took her on, and she already had a dedicated following of aspiring romance authors who looked to her for advice and information about the different publishers. So that gave her a platform. You know, people who had been following and investing in her journey towards publication for years before she got an agent. So yes, it does help, but only when it raises you above everybody else to some degree, in whatever direction it does. You know, even if you're just a really phenomenal photographer or a really funny photographer, and you know, you're doing Instagram or something like that, if you've got a lot of people who are already engaging with you on a social media site, even if it's not a direct link to your book, that's more helpful than, hey, I made a website and I got a Twitter name and I, you know, those are all pieces that you're going to want to have in place before you publish your book, and before you start marketing the book. But in terms of helping me as an agent know that you're going to be effective at marketing your book, they don't tell me that much unless there's something added to it.
Well, when you say effective, one of the things that I know, you know, writers today do have to be really involved in the entire process of promoting books. It's not, I suppose, even Ernest Hemingway had to promote his books, but not to the extent today I really can't imagine Ernest Hemingway tweeting so much, but.
I don't know, 140 characters might not bother him.
Maybe he would have been involved in a lot of those 3 a.m. in the morning tweets after a few drinks.
He is said to have never written drunk. He drank a lot, but he did not subscribe to the drinking and writing school of thought. He did both of them, just not simultaneously.
So, you know, so writers have to get out there, and I recently met a writer who said, "Oh, well, you know, I'm done." I said, "Done? You haven't even started yet. You know, getting your book published." He meant that he got his book published. He had self-published it, well, through a small publisher, and so he thought it was done. And I said, "No, that's not the way it works. You have to get out there and be willing to do a lot of events and work with your." In his case, he doesn't have an agent, but with you, I'm sure you expect all of your writers to get out there and help promote those books.
Absolutely. I think, you know, it is one of the joys and curses of social media that you get to have a very direct relationship with your fans, which has always been helpful. I remember Piers Anthony, who was a very big fantasy author, used to hand... you know, personally respond to every piece of fan mail that he got. And you have to think, even though he was very talented, that was also one of the reasons that people were so invested in his career. You get, you know, a direct connection with anyone who's mildly famous. There's something pretty exciting about that. But today, it really is a lot about forming communities and being an active member of those communities. But I think it's important to keep in mind what you're trying to do, i.e. sell books, and judge whether or not what you're doing is actually effective. Not everybody is good at every form of social media, and I think it behooves you to figure out where your skills lie, where you're going to get the biggest return for your time, because everything is always going to cost you time or money or both, and they're both valuable. So it's important to spend them wisely. And, you know, if you find that you're doing a lot of stuff on Twitter, but it seems to be with the same few people and it doesn't seem to be growing your audience, well, is that really doing what you want it to do? There are a lot of different classes and books and websites these days that will try to teach you how to do social media in various ways. And the goal is... always moving. There are lots. We first started talking about this when it was just Facebook and Twitter, and now you've got, you know, Snapchat and Instagram and Vine and any number of other things. But again, I think if you think about it in terms of communities and you think about it in terms of what you're good at, you can kind of find your niche and make it a part of what you're doing and make it authentic, because I think the other thing that we're all very attuned to is spam. And if you're just trying to sell something to somebody, it starts to just look like advertising. And we are very attuned to ignoring advertising wherever we encounter it, because we encounter it so frequently these days. So I think that there needs to be a genuine connection. The nice thing about social media is that it can foster that. But if people feel like you're always just trying to sell to them, they're going to be less inclined to listen to what you have to say.
Well, you know, everyone will be inclined to listen to what you say. Where's the next? What conferences do you have coming up this year?
Oh, well, Thriller Fest is coming up, and I'm going to most likely be doing that. That's
in
New York.
That's in New York.
Okay. Right here. Yeah. And, you know, I do have people come who are not just pitching thrillers, although obviously most of the programming is geared towards mysteries and thrillers. I just got done with a Romantic Times convention down in sunny Las Vegas, which is always a hoot, and I will probably be going to that again next year, which I believe is in Orlando. And I'm going to be doing the New England Crime Bake, too, in November.
Well, that keeps you on the road, huh?
Yes, indeed.
And as I said, it's a fantastic, fantastic career. And you're, of course, well known in as I said, as a super agent and working with Irene Goodman, who is a an amazing person. And I want to tell all my listeners again to go to the Irene Goodman webpage, IreneGoodman.com, and they can find there the submission guidelines to you, right?
Yes, and to all of us.
To all of you. Mm-hmm. And also the fantastic opportunity to bid on a critique from Irene Goodman herself. So,
which makes also a wonderful gift. I know a number of people who have bought them in the past, either for a birthday or around a holiday. And Mother's Day is coming up.
Wow, that's a great idea. Absolutely. It's a fantastic idea. And there are a lot of writers out there who have who really will benefit from something like this, because it's to get a critique from Irene is really fantastic.
She has a phenomenal eye, and she will I can make a guarantee she will tell you something that makes you a better writer.
That's a great endorsement. So Miriam, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. It's fantastic to talk to you, and I just look forward to meeting you. Perhaps when you're in Orlando, I'll pop over to Orlando and meet you there.
Please do.
Okay. So have a wonderful summer going to all these exciting places.
Take care. Thank you
again. Okay. Thank you so much for being on today. Bye-bye. Okay, I really enjoy talking to Miriam, and knowing that meeting her could be so helpful in your career. So if you're if you've written a thriller, the Thriller Fest is July 5th through July 9th at the Grand Hyatt in New York City, and you can go onto their website. It's called thrillerfest.com, and there are so many wonderful things that you can attend there, and one of them, of course, is you can get these pitch sessions and really find out some wonderful ideas for promoting your book, for finding an agent, which is what you need to do. And I'm one of the people who's going to be at this Thriller Fest is CJ Box. He was on my program a few weeks ago, and you'll really enjoy getting the opportunity to meet him. And so I suggest that you all go and look at the thrillerfest.com on the webpage. You'll see all the information you need about the cost, and so you can submit your application to be part of that event. And I just want to thank everyone for being on listening today. And remember, if you're looking for a place to go this coming week, Tuesday night is karaoke night at the Miami Avenue Wine Bar on Indian Rocks Beach. And that's located just down from the post office. And you'll really enjoy it. It's Miami Avenue Wine Bar with karaoke night on Tuesdays, jazz nights on Thursdays. And on the weekends, on Friday and Saturday night, there's dancing. So take yourself, get yourself out of the house and away from politics and away from all the hassle of work, and just enjoy yourself and have a nice night out at and meet Bev, the owner of Miami Avenue Wine Bar. She's a real sweetheart, and she'll make you feel welcome. So I suggest you head that direction. Then just thank you for joining me today, and be back on Thursday when I have another exciting guest coming up. And meanwhile, remember, live life with love and treasure each day. Find your joy and share it. Bye for now.